You're listening to Food and Drink, a podcast brought to you by Business News Wales in partnership with Food and Drink Wales, Ambition North Wales and Mentera.
Hello, welcome to this podcast brought to you by Business News Wales and hosted by me, Caroline Jones. Today, we're going to be looking at the food and drink sector and in particular, how we address skills shortages in the food and drink industry. I'm joined by three guests who are going to share their experiences with us in this podcast. The first is Kate Rees. Kate is a project manager at Food and Drink Skills Wales. Kate, you're welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me, Caroline.
And my second guest is Chris Butler. Chris is the marketing manager at Radnor Hills. Chris, welcome.
Hi, Carwin. Thanks for having me.
And last but not least, I'm joined by Sarah Drummond. Sarah is the director of finance and operations at Drop Bear. Sarah, welcome.
Hi, Carwin. Thanks for having me as well.
So let's look at skills. One of those areas that is often said to have been affected by Brexit. That's old news now. It'll be 10 years next year since the referendum. I'm getting old. But let's see what the current state of play is in terms of food and drink skills. Who better to ask about the current state of play than Kate Rees, who works, of course, at Food and Drink Skills Wales. Tell us, Kate, a bit about what you do as an organisation.
Diolch. So Food and Drink Skills Wales is a Welsh Government-funded programme delivered by Mentera. And the programme works with food and drink industry to upskill staff, increase productivity and efficiency for producers. The objective overall is to fuel innovation and sustainable growth in Wales. Businesses can access between 50 and 80% funding towards training, depending on size. And our team helps prepare employees across Wales to adapt to changes, opportunities across the manufacturing and processing in food and drink. We can help anything from technical, business, environmental challenges. And we also have a team that support youth engagement work, looking to promote careers in the industry and inspiring that future generation.
What are you finding are the particular areas of challenge, if I can put it that way, in terms of recruitment? Where have we got particular shortages?
That's an interesting question, actually. I think we put together an expert group to look at this problem a bit more and see where those gaps are, identify them, if it was affecting the whole industry or particular areas of the industry. And one of the key things that we came up with that was a challenge for all producers or a lot of producers was food-specific engineers. A couple of things we discussed that might be causing that is a lack of knowledge about the amazing career opportunities in the food and drink industry. Maybe it's not the first thing that comes to mind for engineers. And something that we really need to shout about in the food and drink industry a bit more, what opportunities are out there, the longevity of careers in the food and drink industry and how exciting and challenging they can really be.
Okay. Thanks, Kate. Now, Chris, Radnor Hills has been established for quite a few years now, hasn't it? A good while, a successful business with a profile both in Wales, UK and abroad, of course. But of course, you're based in quite a rural area there in Radnor. So give us an idea of, well, first of all, tell us about the business. Tell us about Radnor Hills. We know it's associated with water, but give us a bit of the history of the business and what you do.
Sure, yeah. So this will be our 35th year, actually, our 35th birthday this year. And the Radnor Hills brands have sort of grown from traditionally just water in over 35 years into market leading in schools. We do work with own label for a lot of the major multiples, and we produce all sorts of soft drink solutions for various different trade channels. I think what's different about us here is there's a real theme or real culture for reinvesting in the site and its people. And that sort of set us apart from some of our competitors. So we've got every packaging format produced for soft drinks all from this site in Powys. So that includes glass, PET, plastic, recycled plastic, Tetra Pak, cans. So there's a lot of ability to be quite agile and innovative all from one site, which is really exciting. But it does come with its own challenges because we are very rural, as you mentioned, and Powys being the biggest county in Wales is, there's quite sparse distance between different towns. And it's a two-pronged kind of challenge, because we've got to inspire people to come and work here and see that there's value in staying here and developing their careers in the long term. And then also we've got to inspire people from outside to bring their expertise to us. And, you know, you use Radnor as somewhere people can really come in and impart some of their own wider market knowledge and experience. So, it's a challenge of two stories, really, but something which we really enjoy tackling and working with programs like Food and Drink Skills Wales to help us achieve.
Sarah, you're one of the newer businesses in Wales, Dropbear, very successful, grown very quickly over a short period of time. Tell us a bit more about Dropbear and what you do.
We started in 2019, so it's been 6 years now, we make alcohol-free craft beer. We aim to make the best that we possibly can on the market. We brew it as normal beer is, brewed and produced. It's been a hell of a ride.
So tell me, sir, this is a sector, I suppose, is quite new. And some of us remember non-alcoholic beers when they first came out, they weren't to be recommended. The sector's changed hugely since then, and you're part of that, of course. But give us an idea of the sort of skills you need. What do you need to be able to flourish as a business, and how do you go about looking for those skills? You're in a fairly urban area. Does that help, or how far do you have to go to get the skills that you need? Give us a flavour of that challenge that you have to overcome in terms of skills and how to obtain them.
It certainly is a challenge. For us, the majority of what we do here for our staff is manufacturing. So we brew, we package, and we warehouse. So we bottle and can in-house. And obviously with anything like machinery based, things like to break. As Kate was saying, you know, it's having the kind of engineer skills is very crucial to us. But what we found as well is that you need to be able to do those smaller tasks in-house. Obviously you need to know how to run the machines. You need to know how to maintain them and do the kind of preventative maintenance as well on certain things that can be done without that kind of engineering background. So we need people who, realistically, the people that we hire don't have those skills, but it's more about having the attitude and the aptitude to be able to train that into them. For us, obviously, health and safety is a really important thing as well. So we need to be able to train people in that. And quality management, we're making a product that needs to be held to high standards. We hold ourselves to very high standards. We need to make it consistently, and we need to make it high quality, and we need to make it safe. So all of those skills as well is something that we need to make sure we have in our employees. It has been a bit of a challenge, to be honest, to find anyone with any skills coming into it from a brewing perspective. We'd have someone with a brewing background, but we haven't been able to find that really. So we just have a training program where we can instill those skills into people.
How much interest is there in terms of attracting people into the sector? Do you find it a challenge, or is it something you're able to overcome pretty easily?
I think everyone thinks that working in a brewery is going to be super fun, which, don't get me wrong, we have our fun times. But at the end of the day, you know, we're a manufacturer, we're running a business. It is actually really exciting. You know, it's a natural product, and it has, you know, those kind of natural variances, and it's such an old traditional thing that we do here. There's so much to be said for that. But also I think it's about communicating it to candidates that the way we run our business is that you could start, you know, in the warehouse, and 5 years later or 2 years later, you could be the head brewer. You know, we want everyone to have as many skills as, well, A, we need them to have, and then B, as they want to have on top of that. So we really want to empower people.
Thanks, Sarah. Chris, for yourself, very different, of course, part of Wales, rural Radnorshire compared to urban West Glamorgan, if I can put it that way. Is it more challenging, do you think, to attract people into rural areas compared to urban areas? Is it a challenge to be away from, relatively a fair way from, higher education institutions, for example? I mean, what skills do you look for, and how do you look to attract people into your part of the world?
Yeah, it's an interesting challenge we find here. There is a general culture that we've noticed, a trend that younger workforce are sort of going to the cities or moving out to highly populated, more condensed areas, because that's where they feel that the best opportunities are for them. But so really to negate that, it's our prerogative, I think, at Radnor, for us to really try and market out to the wider world about all the different opportunities there are available when you started a career at Radnor Hills, or similarly at a rural manufacturing business. And I'm very much mirroring what Sarah said. I love that that kind of journey of your career. I started in a warehouse myself at Radnor Hills, and have moved through various different job roles, and now currently heading up the marketing team. So, you know, I think and that's a story that is not unique to me at Radnor. That's a lot of members of the team here have spent their careers developing, and they don't always end up in the same position to the one they started in. So that's something that we try and do with any means necessary. At the moment, the main ways of us targeting that are we do a lot of college and university visits. So we host them on site, we show them around, we introduce them to all the different directors or all the different teams, give them tours. And we also have created an insight series of videos, which we put out into our contract catering and school education network, to which we provide soft drinks to already. So we've got that in there, and they really like that we've got these resources available to inspire students to want to move into food and drink manufacturing. And the other way is really inspiring Radnor as somewhere that people will aspire to want to come and work to if they're already an expert in their field. You know, it's quite a humble culture here, and we're always up for learning about, oh, how can we improve, and what expertise can we learn from new members of staff. So even if they've been out in other roles in various other companies, that if they come here, they could actually bring a wealth of knowledge with them, learn something new themselves, and develop their career further that way. So that's kind of the main ways we're doing it at the moment.
What sort of skills are you looking for? I mean, Sarah mentioned the engineering particularly was important to drop bare. When are the skills? I mean, obviously financial skills are important to be able to run a business, but in terms of some of the technical skills, if I can put it that way, what would you look for?
Yeah, I mean, engineering, I think, is across the UK a challenge at the moment. It certainly is a challenge on our side, although we are coming to the end of that recruitment cycle, and actually we've got some really good engineers in now. And I think it comes in waves, it tends to, where, you know, you seem to have a gap, a shortage in a certain space, and that's usually privy to the rest of the UK. Something happens in politics or culture and it kind of has a knock-on effect to business. But there's all sorts, really, to be honest, what we're looking out for. And really, the best people that succeed here and flourish are people that are really open-minded to learning as much as they possibly can, and collaborated across teams and across businesses in Wales, and sharing expertise. It's just that open-mindedness and willingness to learn. Then that's a main driver for us. Whether you're starting your career first job here, and it's the first role you've had it in a professional world, or you're coming in from a 10, 15 year career somewhere else. You know, I think for us, it's a multifaceted thing, you know. But at the moment, yeah, engineering is something we're already focusing on.
Okay, thanks, Chris. So, Kate, from your perspective, where are the particular shortages? If I could ask you that, you know, there are skills that are a challenge in any sector, but where do you, as an organisation, identify there being particular areas that need to be improved?
So, our programme is very much shaped by our producers, where they're telling us their skill shortages are, where we can support the team that they've got in upskilling. I think time is such an important factor in upskilling current employees, and there's so much opportunity there, and a lot of producers are looking into that with us, how we can address some of those shortages through training current employees. We're also doing a lot of work in the educational sector, promoting to young people all the opportunities, letting them know that I think there's a perception of the sector that perhaps it's low skilled or low paid or and social hours, and it's those jobs that maybe aren't so appealing to young people. But actually, there's so much opportunity. And as Chris and Sarah said, you know, it's knowing that there's longevity in careers in the food and drink industry and exciting challenges. And you don't always know what you want to do at 18 or at 17, do you? So having a business that really supports growth and can identify those people within the team that can perhaps fit some of those areas that there's a shortage in outside labour coming in to really thrive as a company and promote inwards while promoting the industry as a whole.
And you mentioned there the way the sector is perceived. I think a lot of people confuse food and drink for hospitality.
Yeah.
And they see hospitality, certainly in this country, as a low-paid job. It's not in Ireland. I mean, certainly if it went to an island, you'd have to be a member of a union to work in the bar. No one could just stroll in. France, you know, it's seen as, if you ask a waiter in France, they expect to know the menu inside out and recommend things. But for some reason, here, and also the US, I think, people have this idea that it's low skill. But you're right. I remember, right, first Royal Welsh I went to in 2000, when I was appointed the day before the event as Agriculture Secretary. And the then food hall was full. So they built another one. Now that's full. It shows you how the sector's grown, hasn't it, over so many years. And yeah, having to access skills is always a nice challenge to have, rather than, you know, struggling to find business in that sense. But as far as, you know, your organisation is concerned, Kate, you mentioned the expert group there. Give us an idea of how you've worked with that expert group to try to identify where the skills shortages, I suppose, are most acute.
Sure. So we brought ambassadors from across the food and drink industry in Wales to give their expertise and their opinions on where they were finding shortages, engineering being one of the big areas that was identified. We've already talked about that. And, you know, we're using that to drive our programme and really push on that to try and support the industry. But having that knowledge and that experience from the producers, getting together in a room, talking about problems, talking about areas that over the years they've seen work, things that haven't worked, and ideas they've had to collaborate and work together to try and minimise some of these problems. And as a programme, it's our job to take that forward and look at where we can be pushing further, where we can be supporting further, training, education. At the moment, we're looking at affecting curriculum change to let young people know about the opportunities out there more and see if we can get more degree apprenticeships to be focusing on food and drink and engineering, those kind of changes really that could have a big economic impact on the industry.
And Kate, we talk about transferable skills, don't we, generally in the economy. Am I right in thinking you've been working with Neath Port Talbot Council to see what opportunities might be presented to ex-Tata steel workers? I think you've had a team in place, haven't you, to tell us a bit more about that intrigue a lot of our listeners.
Yes, we have. It came about as part of the expert group meetings. Ambassadors from the industry recognised that there was skilled labour out there looking for work, and producers out there looking for that skill set. So we worked with Neath Port Talbot Council and the liaison team for Tata Steel to see if we could at least flag up those opportunities out there, and that there was careers available, producers looking to work with them. And we did reach out to the producers, let them know that there was potentially a workforce out there for them. And we've recently worked with the council to look at running some careers fairs, again, just to showcase the opportunities.
Thanks, Kate. Let me come back to you, Chris. I've heard there from Kate, we've heard from Kate about how Food and Drink Skills Wales has been working with businesses. You've been working with them, I understand. Give us an idea of what the relationship has been, and particularly how beneficial it's been to you as a business.
Yeah, it's been incredibly beneficial, and we've been lucky enough to get funding or a steer from the team there for various different situations in various different elements of the business, because not just the manufacturing side, or whether it be marketing or products and innovation for labeling. So we've obviously had funding available to be able to put people through courses or really refine their expertise, so they're really 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 laser focused on the nitty gritty of their job roles, which is really really important. Also, I think that being able to lean on them as experts to go, look, this is our problem, our challenge in this particular circumstance. What have you got available in your network or from your wide experience of working with other businesses? What's already worked? And, you know, that is so much more valuable because of the time it saves you internally. If we went through Google trying to look at all the different courses available for that particular problem, we'd go down a rabbit hole where you can't afford to spend that much time looking. And then even if we lent on a couple of businesses asking them, we maybe wouldn't get an honest answer or wouldn't quite get an objective point of view. Whereas Food and Drink Skills Wales has been really useful for guiding us into, look, this situation, a few businesses have been in the same place as you. This is what's worked for them. This is the few courses or a few solutions that we can suggest to you. And then we pick from there. And that guidance has been, and that open-minded guidance has been really, really beneficial for us and the wider team. So that I would say has been the most useful part of it.
Give us an idea of what that guidance looks like. You go to, you approach Food and Drink Skills Wales, you're looking for help. But what kind of guidance? You mentioned the guidance and help there. Give us a flavour of how that manifested itself in a practical way to you.
Oh, I'm trying to think of a real world example now. We had legal labeling is a good example. In our product innovation side and our marketing side, it's an ongoing, continuously evolving situation with labeling, because nutritional regs change or licensing changes or new laws like the Tasha's law come in, and our team have to be at the forefront of that. I mean, when you're working with food and drink, you have to stay ahead of that. It's not only your legal obligation, but you know, as a brand, we need to make sure we're also giving the best advice out to the people we produce for too. So, being able to come to Food and Drink Skills Wales and say, look, we've got two new members of the team and also some of our team that have been here for 15 years. There's been a lot of changes in legal labeling. Have you got any courses that we can top up on or bring these guys through to new legal labeling courses? In fact, I believe we're about to embark on another course for legal labeling in the coming months through Joe, the P&I director, and that will include not just new members of the team but people who have been here a while. So it's really important that we keep that momentum going. It's not just a tick box exercise for us, right, done, and we don't never have to look at that again. It's an ongoing thing, because in food and drink things change at such a rapid speed. Without that support continuously, we'd struggle to keep up, and those mistakes are mistakes you cannot make.
Oh, thanks, Chris. So I'm going to ask you pretty much the same questions, really, in terms of how it's worked for you as a business. What has Food and Drink Skills Wales done for you? How has it helped your business to grow?
Yeah, they've helped us so much, to be honest. So we've done so many different courses now, mostly focused on production. And the best thing about it for me has been the flexibility. So instead of, as Chris was saying, you know, obviously there's lots of different courses that can be offered, and they have that in their book of courses. But we have had far more kind of bespoke, issues that we needed solutions to. So for example, when we came in here, we took on the staff, but there wasn't a canning line. So we bought a canning line with us, installed it, and no one had ever used a canning line before. So the best people to run that course for us was the manufacturer. Rather than having to go off book, we could go, we could say, okay, the best person to do this is a manufacturer who can give us the skills to be able to, first of all, learn how to use the machine. And then we did another course after that to be able to kind of obviously now we can use the machine. How can we improve the maintenance of it? How can we fix things that are common that go wrong? So for us, you know, it's really plain and simple. The canning line's not working, then we're not getting cans out and we're not making sales. So it is kind of, you know, do or die when it comes to production. We've got to make sure that we reduce our downtime. So we've got to make sure that our staff are empowered with the skills to know how to prevent downtime, first of all, and then how to fix downtime if they can. It's been phenomenal for our business. We also were able to do bottling line training. So obviously the staff existing knew how to use the bottling line, but I wanted them to know a little bit more about it, again, how to maintain it. That's the kind of stuff that they had never learnt. And we've got a new filter that we've just installed as well, so we were able to get some bespoke training on that. So for me, it's the support has just been, you know, it's been one of the best things about being based in Wales is the support that we get. So I really can't speak highly enough about it.
And in terms of how you made contact, how you came to know of Food and Drink Skills Wales, there'd be someone that's saying, oh, this is interesting, but I'm not familiar with Food and Drink Skills Wales. How did you make contact with them, or did they make contact with you? How did you get to know them?
Well, that's a really good question. I'm sure I was contacted about it, which I think is one of the most important things for Welsh Gov is to, you know, communicate about the things that they're doing, because otherwise I would have had no idea. You know, I'm super busy running the business. I'm not, you know, I do search for grants and that every now and then, but not all the time. So it was definitely something that was communicated to me. And then I thought, oh, wow, that opened up my mind so much to what we could do with it. And we've really, you know, taken as much advantage of it as we can to improve our business, improve productivity, reduce downtime, empower our team, who now can, you know, bottle, can, filter, brew, everything. It also kind of levels up our staff base as well, because we've always wanted everyone to be able to do everything. We have new starters who'll come, they're completely fresh. We set them on a brewing course so that they know in theory, they could brew, and they've just started with us. So it's really important to make sure that we upskill everyone as much as possible, and everyone can do a bit of everything in a small business.
Thanks, Sam. What's the future for Drop Bay? Where are you going next? Tell us your future plans.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's just growth, growth, growth. We are really looking to get that national listing this year in the retail space. That's where the majority of consumption is happening, in alcohol-free beer. We know we're ready. We know we've got a great product. And we're really excited to, you know, bring that to the whole of the UK. We're also looking at export. So we do export quite a lot already, especially to Canada. And we're looking to expand that and get some interesting contracts out there and, bring Drop Bear to more of the world. And for us, it's just about doing what we do consistently, keeping our high quality standards. And we'll be growing the team and also continuing to, upskill everyone.
That's right. And Chris, how about Radden Hills? Where are you headed in the future?
Yeah, lots of exciting things going on here. We've got a new Tetrapack line coming in. It'll be finished its installation in February. So that basically opens up the last bit of our capacity. The ball will very much be back in sales and marketing's court, and we'll be ready to hit as many new customers as we can and continue to grow. And then we've got some new products coming out towards the tail end of this summer, which I can't speak too much about now, but those are really exciting gaps in our ranges and some out there NPD as well. So yeah, it should be a really exciting year.
So you could tell me, but you have to kill me.
Yeah, that's quite, okay. Yeah.
Let's leave that there for now. And let's go back to Kate for the final word. Kate, Food and Drink Skills Wales, your Welsh Government funded. Not been easy in terms of funding in the past. How are you going to meet those challenges? We know that it's not going to, the purses are not going to be opening wide soon, are they? So what are your challenges in the future, given that knowledge?
I mean, our focus is always investment and support for the sector. We're perfectly placed with the contact and expertise to continue to facilitate the manufacturing industry to work towards mitigating future skills gaps in terms of we have our two-pronged approach, our engagement work, raising awareness of opportunities, encouraging the next generation, which I think is vital, and our support for businesses. We are currently facing a reduced budget for the next year, which is concerning given the skills challenges that the industry is facing. But we are absolutely committed to doing everything possible with the money we have to continue to support the industry and address the issues. I think we've heard today, haven't we, the difference the support is making and the priority is in the producers and continuing to support.
Well, it's a sector that's grown hugely over the past 20 years, but particularly and still is growing. And I know how important food and drink is in terms of promoting Wales abroad as well. Many thanks to my guests today, Kate, Chris, and Sarah. We hope you enjoyed the podcast and join me again soon.